What's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Did you know we have completely ad-free early access to all of our episodes? Well, we do. Not only that, but we have dozens of bonus episodes waiting for you. Head on over to patreon.com/ghosttownpod, and you can check it out for 7 days absolutely free. That's patreon.com/ghosttownpod.
The Death of a Lost Boy. I'm Rebecca Lieb.
I'm Jason Horton.
And this is Ghost Town.
Bobby Driscoll was a child star, and like a lot of child stars, those stars fade.
Oh.
Yeah.
They don't grow into maturity and become super dwarf stars and burn brightly for years and years to come.
Unfortunately, this one burnt out pretty quickly and pretty tragically. And Bobby Driscoll was a Disney star. So I think, at least for us and for this podcast, kind of lends like an a certain strange history. You know, when you anytime you mix in Disney, which is classic and iconic, but also Disney has its own thing.
Yeah. Disney, it's another, I think for me, like trying to pinpoint exactly what that is, that extra thing, it's like Disney has such a level of knowledge and familiarity in all of our lives. It's like another thing that you're like, oh, this familiar thing turned on its head, or like the dark side of this thing that we think is so wholesome and American.
Yeah. And, you know, there's sometimes there's a price to pay.
No way.
Sometimes there is, though. Yeah, no, it's not just, you know, you do this and only good things will happen and nothing bad could possibly happen when you're thrust into stardom. I mean, but in the 1940s is a great time to be a child star.
Oh, yeah. You're not taking advantage of it at all. There's no weird bad regulations. You can work
laws.
As long as you want, whenever you want.
So strap in. For this one, we're going to take a little trip starting in the 1940s, but he appeared, Bobby Driscoll appeared in Disney films, including Song of the South, which is there's a little bit of
controversy,
very controversial, but it is a fact of this episode. So Dear to My Heart, Treasure Island, and Melody Time.
I'm sure I've seen Treasure Island. Melody Time, not so sure.
He also voiced Goofy Jr. In two animated shorts. So pretty iconic.
Mm-hmm.
And those two shorts were Fathers Are People and Father's Lion.
Mm.
His last role for Disney is what really put him on the map. And it was the voice of Peter Pan for the 1953 animated film of the same name. And he actually won an Oscar, a juvenile Oscar.
Whoa.
A juvie-o? For his roles in the film So Dear to My Heart and The Window. So pretty successful.
Wow.
And like many young stars, it doesn't last.
Yeah. I think especially when your currency is being like a cute Disney star too. Like we see that all the time now, honestly, when we like talk about the Sprouse brothers who are in a good shape, you know, for the most part, like they're still working and stuff, but or you see them get into things or whatever. Like I would imagine this happening in the 50s, being a Disney star, then it being, like we said, like 40-fold.
And I mean, look, Ryan Gosling, whatever happened to him? He was a Disney person, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was in the Mickey Mouse Club with like
Mickey Mouse Club,
Christina Aguilera and Britney Spears. I forget who else was in it with them, but they were more. Some of them are doing better than others.
Yeah.
I will say that. Ryan Gosling, though, you know,
he's doing all right.
What
I used to see him all the time at Black Cat, which is this bar. When we used to go to bars, remember that? Down on Sunset. And he was as hot as you have seen on the films.
Yeah, and I've seen him on the films.
You've seen him on the films?
Hot. Yeah, he's hot. You know, you get older, your voice changes, you look different.
Ugh.
Even at the height of where he plays Peter Pan, he was dropped by Disney.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
And they're like, let's get Mary Martin in here. Like, what was the plan, you know?
Well, you ever hear of Howard Hughes?
Yeah, I've heard of him. And his fingernails and urine chambers.
Is maybe pre that, but on the cusp of that.
Yeah, when he was like handsome. When he looked like, in my mind, Leonardo DiCaprio in the Aviator.
Okay.
Yeah.
So according to Hollywood biographer Mark Elliott, mm-hmm. when Howard Hughes bought RKO, he in effect became the owner of Disney Studios. He controlled the money and he hated Bobby Driscoll.
Whoa.
He hated Hollywood kids. He thought they were precocious, weren't real, and incredibly annoying. He didn't want Bobby Driscoll to be with Disney anymore.
Whoa.
Interesting business to be in, though, when you're like, I hate kids.
Yeah.
What do you want, a bunch of like 58-year-olds?
Exactly. That's the thing. I'm like, what is the, like, I think he makes some fair point. Like, yeah, I'm sure, like, you know, like, stage kids are annoying. I've been around them. It is annoying. But like, as opposed to, what are you going to get, some like old voice actor?
Well, it's like it's going to be the great grandparent trap.
Yeah. cool. Yeah.
It's not a bad idea.
I like that. Well, let's run with it. I'm giving that the green light.
Somebody get out your checkbook, because we want to make that. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't help, especially when it's not even, you know, you're in a couple of flops or there's no way to find you. It's like you're really at the height. This is where, you know, the pivoting should be happening to have you more front and center, and then you mm-hmm. get dropped. This, you know, when studios would kind of own contracts mm-hmm. and like kind of that old Hollywood thing, you were like, you were with Disney, you're with RKO, or you're with Paramount, or whatever the case may be. So it wasn't just like, well, I'll just go audition for something else, and mm-hmm. it just really didn't work like that. So he found some acting work post-Disney, but he also found heroin.
Ooh, oof.
During high school. So he went back to high school in this kind of normal world.
That's awful.
And it was probably tough for him because, you know, there's people that are like, oh, well, look who's back.
Yeah.
Or, and, you know, you don't know what if he had, a chip on his shoulder, but it had to be pretty tough because it doesn't prepare you.
No, but let's say everything goes well and you're a child star and you stop being a child star and you're pretty well adjusted and you're like, whatever. And then you go to a high school.
Which is tough in general, even if you're.
Yeah, even if you're not. But like, even let's say child star wants to be normal, go to a normal high school. There's already an adjustment period, already a socialization that you're unfamiliar with. But like, add any stress or struggle to the mix, that just sounds incredibly traumatic.
So we found, some comfort in drugs mm-hmm. and heroin. And he eventually had two sons and a short-lived marriage, but he also had a lot of trouble with the law. Mm. So he was, he had trouble.
Yeah.
And that's just the road he went down. He was sentenced in 1961. He was remanded to the Narcotic Rehabilitation Center of the California Institute for Men in Chino, California, because his drug addiction was so problematic and just run-ins with the law. And they were like, this is your, this is hopefully will help, and this is your sentence. And then after that, finding acting work, forget about it.
Yeah. Especially, like, what year was this anyway?
The early 60s. So it's like where...
It's not even like late 60s were, like, again, a little bit more culturally forgivable. Like, you're a child star. You have had drug problems. You're incarcerated. Like, who... It's like, great. Enjoy yourself. Maybe find a new line of work.
He did briefly find a home in a community in New York City with a little collective group.
No.
I like to call The Factory.
Oh, no.
From Andy Warhol.
Oh.
So the world of the avant-garde.
I thought you were going to say something like Heaven's Gate. And I was like, oh, boy.
No.
This is much cooler.
Yeah.
But also probably not good for a guy trying to rehab himself.
But he kind of, for a time, found his people.
Mm.
And his last role was actually in a short film produced by Andy Warhol.
Oh.
It was called Dirt, and he played a nun. And it is odd. I have watched it. And I listen, I'm very interested in that time period.
Yeah.
In New York City. I love pop art. You know, I mm-hmm. really love that Andy Warhol pop art. I just find that whole thing compelling. And, you know, it's things like this that I'm sure opened up, you know, Basquiat, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, Basquiat and even a lot of art. And
yeah,
and
that time is really interesting and just like a form, like making community art and communal art. And like, obviously, Andy Warhol is not a non-problematic figure. And I think, you know, a lot of people have mixed feelings about him. But actually, if you've ever read the Edie Sedgwick biography, it is incredible.
And she was involved, or was it her mother?
Yeah, she was.
I'm thinking of Kira Sedgwick. So
yeah,
Edie was
she's
her
related
mother.
To. No,
are there cousins?
They're like cousins.
Cousins, okay.
But yeah, very well connected debutante who was in the factory, like kind of a factory star for a long time, and she also had problems with drugs.
The Velvet Underground. Was
yeah, absolutely.
Nico. And,
I mean, everyone at that time in New York, like such an interesting time, and she, and maybe that's why this name sounds familiar because. I believe she was in that film maybe or something around like very close to that time where they were all just kind of like struggling to make interesting art. And yeah, like all of these like lives of these different people, it's pretty incredible.
And I say, so I watched it and it's a short film and mm-hmm. it, there's not like really dialogue. Mm-hmm. It's you have random nudity and tubs
yeah, like jump
and
cuts
nuns.
And nudity.
Yeah, it's a real, I mean, it's avant-garde mm-hmm. to the nth degree. Mm-hmm. So on March 30th, 1968, two boys were playing in an abandoned East Village apartment.
Oh, God.
And found Bobby Driscoll dead on a cot in one of the rooms. And all he had were two beer bottles and some scattered religious pamphlets. Really sad. Like,
that
really.
Horribly sad.
Yeah. Just imagine being, you know, two kids probably playing, you know, obviously pretty dangerous is just like
yeah.
exposed wire.
Yeah.
And like,
maybe don't let your kids play in a warehouse if you can help it.
And just finding, just dying, I'm assuming, alone.
Yeah.
Of, you know, alcohol.
Yeah.
It was like an alcohol based. Yeah. Like, hardening of the arteries and stuff like that, but just the drug abuse and alcohol abuse, all the abuse really caught up. And he was, you know, pretty
How
young.
Old
was he? Like 31.
Oh my
so
God.
Pretty young. But, you know, when you start in high school and you probably, you know, relatively for the most part, probably go pretty hard.
Yeah.
And no one's really telling you not to. And you like, you know, I can't speak for what happened, but it's like, mm. you know, you find your people, but then, you know, then you're just kind of living on the street, which is sad. And
yeah.
what's even sadder is his mother was, you know, they were estranged and his father died. So she's like, I want to connect with him and kind of let him know. You know, and of course, when they found him, they had no ID. They had no way to identify him.
Ugh.
So in 1969, just a year after, his mother was hoping to connect. And she actually, with the help of Disney, trying to track him down via the NYPD. And they did a fingerprint match. And they found him because he was buried on Hart Island. Which is a Potter's Field, which is in the Bronx.
Yeah.
So it is just where, you know, you don't know who these people are,
mm-hmm.
you know. Hart Island, Potter's Field is very interesting because they had recently – it's closed it off and then they recently opened it
mm-hmm.
again. And the public didn't even know about his death until 1972 when it was made known by reporters in conjunction with Song of the South being re-released in theaters. So – super tragic, super mm-hmm. sad. A really tough story and an interesting road that he went down.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, I mean, I don't know how often I would go watch something Disney from the 50s, but mm-hmm. I imagine people do because Disney is so iconic.
Exactly. The repertoire of Disney and with Disney Plus too. Like, I don't know exactly what's on there, but like, yeah, like people like Billy Drixel.
Hamilton is definitely on there.
Yes. That's the only thing I've watched. I know everyone talked about The Mandalorian for a while. That's neither here nor there. But yeah, his work lives on. Like, it is still beloved part of the Disney repertoire. Yeah. That's really sad. And also when you start as a child actor, like think about when you get your first job, like maybe like 13, like, you know, you get your first job or you start earning money at a certain point in your life. And it's usually like, you know, you're a teenager or like a tween or something. And you start like slowly working. But when you're a kid who's like making this living, whose parents are like relying, you know,
and everyone's telling you how great you are. And
yeah. You don't have a sense of self yet. Like it's a very delicate place to be.
My first job was a place called Ponderosa Steakhouse.
I know Ponderosa. You know Ponderosa?
Okay.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I was 14. Mm-hmm. And it, what I liked about it is it made me remember my social security number because that's how you had to punch in. And so that's how I easily remembered my social security number at a very young age because I found
great.
It very helpful. But I remember one time it was like, you know, I had like a buffet type salad. It was like a sizzler type
thing. Yeah, it's very sizzler-esque.
And I remember somebody dumped a whole, a bunch of rice on the floor or something like that. And they literally just took their hand and scooped it back in and then just put it. And I remember seeing that and never, ever forgetting that.
No.
And it's.
That's a very vivid. That's a powerful image.
Yeah.
I could really go for a Ponderosa steak right now. Oof.
Hey, Ghost Town listeners. I'm Peyton Moreland.
And I'm Garrett Moreland.
And this is Murder with My Husband, a true crime podcast. We bring you a unique perspective on true crime podcasting because I absolutely love it.
And I hate it. I cannot comprehend the fascination with true crime.
Listen as I venture into the darkest crimes by telling a different true crime story each week to get Garrett's reaction and discuss how we see each of the morbid details differently.
Two point of views, one true crime podcast.
Available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you choose to listen. I love it.
And I hate it.
Goodbye.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
History is full of bizarre, unsolved mysteries. And over time, these stories have been bent by rumor, warped by social media, and twisted into legend. I'm Michael May, and on A Study of Strange, we dig into these real mysteries and seek the truth, as close as we can get anyway. Recently, we've covered true crime cases like the Greystone Mansion murder, the Red Lipstick Killer, and America's first reported serial killers. Of course, every now and then we also dive into the odd, esoteric, and paranormal, including vanishing people, haunted locations, and UFO history. So if you like your mysteries historical, or if you love a good debunking every now and then, search A Study of Strange wherever you listen to podcasts. And remember, the truth is always stranger than fiction.